we're at this point where we have more control than we ever have at every tier. So why aren't we doing that and utilizing that? And how do we get it to that next level as musicians without overdoing it or overdoing it? Who cares if that's the moment?
Ice cold, heart in a cage, hasn't beat since 98.
Welcome everybody to Nashville Drummers Podcast, episode 33.
Today's guest is Rob Bodley, who many of you may know from Nashville rock act, The Foxys. And Rob and I had coffee a few months ago, and we've stayed fairly close. And it was so good to finally have him on and really dive deep into his career and what he's currently up to. Rob is such a genuine professional in every sense of the word. And this was a very wide-ranging interview. We discussed a lot of different topics, including touring, playback, Ableton, and music directing. Rob reminds us to sort of zoom out of our specific role on the drums and to focus on elevating our live show and our live set and kind of thinking bigger picture, whether that be the way you transition between songs, the way you count off those songs, or even, you know, the sounds that you're getting. Which drums are you using? And maybe that's electronics, maybe it's a hybrid. We get into all of that. He shares some really cool stories and perspectives, which I really appreciated.
Yeah. Well, and I really appreciated, we got to dive into a little bit of the nerdier practice stuff, which is my bread and butter, if I'm being honest. So getting to talk to him about what he calls distracted practice.
Yeah, that was a gold mine.
That was, man, that was some good stuff. We hope you enjoy this episode. And before we get started here, just want to remind everyone that it's getting hot. It's the perfect time to adorn your Nashville Drummers Podcast official tank top.
Yeah, these are super comfy. We got all sizes available, small, medium, large, and extra large. Just $20, Venmo or cash, and we'll get those into your hands.
And onto your head and scalp, we will also adorn a hat, which will keep your eyes from going blind from the sun, which is deadly.
The way you said it, sounds like we're like gluing these hats on their heads.
Yeah, permanent.
Sounds like a forceful.
Keep it. You're not taking that thing off. We're going to shave your head bald, cover it in glue, put it on there, and then once on there, we're stapling it. That's, it's not going anywhere.
Brand awareness, baby.
Yeah.
But yeah, purchasing merch really does help support what Nate and I are doing on the podcast and helps us continue to put out new episodes month after month. And before we get into the episode, I want to give a quick shout out for the Music City Drum Show happening July 29th and July 30th right here in Nashville, Tennessee. This year's event will feature hundreds of exhibitors with new products that you can test and try for yourself. Also, this year's clinics will feature Rich Redmond and Ray Luzier, so don't want to miss those. We actually interviewed Landon Hall, the founder of the Drum Show, back in episode 13, so definitely check that out. And he gives us a behind-the-scenes look into how he actually started a drum show from scratch, which is really cool stuff. And again, you can use the promo code NDP, all lowercase, for 10% off tickets, which are available only online at musiccitydrumshow.com. We hope to see you there.
I need to build this tracks rig for this other artist. I will almost immediately go into doing that during quality time. Like, my brain will start looking on websites and like and researching things. And she's like, this is not quality because you are not here. I'm like,
right.
Oh, yeah.
Yep. I've been learning the same thing. As we went through it, and actually we talked about this on just the last podcast. We did a little like mini podcast about mental health, which was fun.
It really was fun.
Dude, like, who knew that a topic that's so heavy would end up being like such a good time, and really enjoyed doing it.
Yeah.
But I talked about it, like, I almost got divorced because I didn't have that balance figured out. And now I'm like, not to say that I have it perfectly figured now, but.
It's a juggle, right?
Right. But I'm way further along now. I'm, oh yeah, okay. And for her, it's the same thing. Quality time, very, very important. My need for that is so minimal. I'm like, if I'm just in your presence and we get, like you said, an hour, I'm like, yep, cool. That fills my tank. I'm like, I know you love me. You know I love you. That's what I'm thinking.
And then she's like, time to practice.
Yeah, exactly. I'm like,
I'll be back in a couple hours.
She said, well, I need you to do this. And then I'm like, okay, I'm learning that. And that feels good too, because I can see that filling up her emotional tanks, which makes me happier. Seeing that reflected is just so, it's so satisfying. I'm sure you feel the same way.
Oh, yeah. I mean, when you, it shows too, because then the things that you need become more easy for your significant other to do.
Right.
You know, like say your quality, like she's quality time, so you give her that quality time, and then your words of affirmation.
Yeah.
The words of affirmation flow more freely when you're satisfying that person's needs.
Yep.
And it becomes this kind of like, you know, ebbs and flows. It works better that way. And like once we had that conversation, it's been so easy. Again, we've been together 10 years, pretty much at this point, just growing up together. But I mean, it's about ebbs and flows because tour comes and goes, you know, like
right.
You may get the, especially if you're subbing or if you need a break or if you're on a break with one artist and you got someone else that just asked you, you're like, hey, I'm going to go out for like 2 weeks with this other person, you know, and then you got rehearsals and all this other stuff that you have to be doing when you're in town. Hmm. So it's like you have to learn to ebb and flow. So when you are there, being present is so key, you know?
Yeah.
And I'm not really doing any subbing stuff myself right now, but I still have a lot of side work that gets in the way. And musicians, we're so there's nuance, especially in drummers. I feel like every drummer I meet, it's very different. We're focused in a different way. We're a weird breed.
Hmm. Yes, we are.
Yeah.
That's why we started this podcast.
Yeah, right?
To uncover all the weirdness.
Well, and you know, I think one of the hallmarks of being a musician is, I mean, it's cliche at this point, but there's such a struggle to it because it's not a traditional profession.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I guess, well, I'm going to put air quotes on traditional. And you have to sometimes string together so many ideas. Well, maybe this will work. Maybe this gig will pay off. Maybe if I work with these guys, eventually that'll turn into something before something actually pops off. And that doesn't exactly stop. I mean, for some people it does. You land like a giant gig and you go, you know what? That's all I need. That's it. Like,
yeah.
I'm Steve Ferroni. I'm going to play for Tom Petty and that's it. I don't need to do anything else.
Or Jake Summers playing with Luke Combs.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
You know,
right.
Like, I mean, that's a Cinderella story. You know, and he has really good advice on how he, you know, his story.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But like someone could follow that exact advice and still never get that gig.
Right.
Yes.
You know? Yeah, exactly. There isn't a perfect formula to follow. It's just, you're going to struggle. That's what is going to happen.
The advice I give to every musician and friend that either wants to move here or LA or New York.
Mm.
I've definitely been telling people to move to New York less. Yeah. I'm like, what scenes there?
What are you trying to do?
Mark?
Jazz, right?
Yeah.
Oh, so you're trying to do straight ahead jazz? Well, no. Oh.
Oh, okay.
Okay. Right on. So do you already have a huge pop gig?
Yeah, right.
No? Okay. Why are you moving there?
You'd be better off moving to Atlanta.
Dude.
Yeah. The Atlanta scene is dope.
Yeah.
But get used to playing pop and hip hop, which is, I love playing. But right. Yeah.
So Rob, you've been in Nashville, what, 10 years almost?
Oh God. Well, leaning on that side of five, but I think between 6 and 7 right now. Yeah.
Okay.
I can't really remember. The significant other knows probably the exact hour.
Yeah,
so I'm sure.
I'm like, about that, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. Cool. Well, tell our good listeners, you know, just what you're currently up to. This will probably air in June 2023, and then I'm sure we'll get into your backstory and your journey here and everything.
Yeah. I played drums for a group called the Foxies, but I'm also the music director of that band. I work with all of our tech, so I'm hand-in-hand constantly calling our production manager, our audio team. But yeah, my main focus is drums and music directing, building the live show, the ebbs and flows of a live show. That's really my big focus of that group. And then all the crazy social media stuff, all those meetings that you got to do when you're in the band, that stuff really is mind numbing, but I'm there for those, you know,
yeah.
Sipping my coffee going TikTok.
Exactly.
In more ways than one. TikTok. TikTok.
Good one.
Cringy words. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I do a lot of work with other artists, whether I'm subbing in on drums. I've kind of been stepping out of that role and focusing more on live coaching and music directing. So a lot of the artists I did play for, I now hire a new drummer and I show up and kind of coach the musicians in the band, including, you know, everyone in the band, whether it's the guitarist, keyboard player, doesn't matter. But really focusing on building their show. And again, that's what I do in the Foxies, and kind of just kind of morphed into that. I didn't really have time to keep playing drums and letting people down and saying, hey, I'm not in town, I'm not available, but I still want to be present in developing your artistry. And I love that. I love being a part of the growth of other artists. So, as much as I wanted to do it, and I did it for about a year where I was trying to drum with anyone and everyone that I had already on the roster, I just realized with the home life balance and everything else, it wasn't possible. So I pulled myself out and said, I want to be present and help you and grow that, but from the capacity of which I can do it. So
yeah, that's so cool. We talked to a lot of drummers on here that I have kind of touched or, you know, gotten their hands dirty with directing or especially with playback, but like, it seems like you're doing a lot more than just setting up, you know, tracks and
Yeah, it starts there.
Do you play other instruments besides drums?
Yeah, I went to school for music, so I have a degree in performance, and it came hand in hand with percussion. So mallets, but they force you to, they force you to play piano, and I don't regret a bit of it. So
yeah. And okay, where'd you go to school? Where are you from? Let's back it up.
Yeah. So I'm from upstate New York, right outside of Syracuse. Yeah.
That's right.
So little town. I would say more country than Nashville, to be honest with you.
Like, I had some friends who were just texting me who were there last night, actually.
Yeah. It's a fun town to visit because it's such a different space, but it's so boring. I mean, there's literally nothing to do but go to a Syracuse game and get in trouble.
Yeah.
So I kind of fell into music in a weird way. There's so many musicians in my hometown. It was unreal. We had Battle of the Bands, and like the amount of musicians that came out of my town were crazy. So my English teacher's son played drums for Travis Tritt for years, Big and Rich.
Wow.
So David Northrup, one of the older guys in country music, and he was a big mentor to me. I'd always ask him as many questions as I could. But yeah, I didn't really want to do music, kind of just fell into it. I was a skateboarder. I wanted to do all of that. I think that's a lot of like early 2000s musicians stories, you know, like punk kid.
Yep. Those early childhood bands.
Yeah,
and like,
right.
The dreams.
Yeah. I was listening to a bunch of the podcasts and, you know, one, I think it was the first one, man, it was a while ago, but you grew up in Reading, right?
Right.
Yeah. And yeah, you had bands. So we all know.
Yeah.
I was in a Travis Barker, pop punk, Blink-182 cover band.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Travis Barker.
So were those musical roots started in high school? Or where did that?
Yeah, you know? I took music. I was in music all throughout school.
Yeah.
My music teacher then would tell you I was lazy and didn't have a musical bone in my body, but on the other hand would tell everyone I was very good and just wanted to pull something out of me. So it was really interesting because many years later I found out he had been telling my parents that like he just needs to stop being lazy. Because I remember I would fall asleep and then like wake up and be like, ding, ding, ding.
Yeah. So you're doing like concert band and orchestra?
Yeah. I mean, anything I get my hands on. As soon as drum set became a thing in my school, I was like, I want that. Yeah. I'm going to do that. So, yeah, I mean, it started really early, though. My dad got me a snare drum, and, you know, my dad was a godsend. He was a hard man, but I think that's why I you know, I am where I am. He got me a snare, and he said, if you can't play music on this, I won't buy you a next thing. So he's like, I want you to be able to take the snare and not just play rudiments and not just play snare pieces. He's like, make it musical. And then he bought me brushes and then he bought, you know, and he's like, make this musical.
Yeah.
And then once he saw that and heard it, he, you know, eventually I got a drum set and, but.
That's cool. That's the first time I'm hearing that. Normally it's like, oh, what's your first kit? As kids, we just get a drum set as a whole, but not like individual pieces.
Yeah. I mean, he was pretty strict to his rules, wanted it that way. But he said, if you want to do something, I will invest every bit. If you show that progression and desire and hunger for it, I will invest all the way to the end. And he still does. Like, I don't ever ask him for things. But the man will legitimately just, like, you'll just wake up. And it's not even financially. It's just, like, other level of investments of, like, being at shows. My dad's very sick. Yeah. Being at places he shouldn't be. And you're just, like, there's that level of love. Like, I would be playing drums, and I'd turn around, and he'd be sleeping in the chair next to me with earplugs in.
Dude, that's amazing. Wow.
And I was just like, this man loves it. Yeah. Yeah. So
that's special.
I think that's why when we were talking about like the ultimatums and stuff like that, when we came to that crossroad in my relationship, I knew that I would never give this up. Many relationships where girls are like, I just don't want a musician. I don't want to date that. They loved the idea, but then I've been touring almost full time. I started at 19 and I was on my first full tour across the US, 19 years old. So I had no idea what I was doing. But many girlfriends where I was like, this, I'm never choosing you. Like, you got to know this.
Yeah.
And it was one line my dad specifically said, and he said, I've never seen my son happier than when he's on stage. Hmm. And it's true. When I'm up there, I'm in the moment. I'm just alive. I feel it. You know, you guys probably feel it too. You're there and you're just like, this is the most home I've ever felt.
Yes.
And I'm like, I will never give this up. Unless, like, I lose every limb on my body.
Right.
Hopefully I never do.
God forbid that should happen. Yeah, 100%.
Even if I lose one limb, I'll figure it out.
Dude, yeah.
Definitely. Def Leppard.
Yeah.
Let's go, man. If that's, like, alive in you, you're going to find a way to make that a thing. I'm like, if I lose all my limbs, I'll compose. I'll freaking put my nose on a Logic session and point and click and freaking, I'm like, yes, I will never stop.
Just wheel me in there and I'll start music directing with no limbs.
Yep.
Put the baton in my mouth. I'll start conducting.
God. I love it. Dude, so you mentioned your first tour at 19. Tell us about that. Like, who was that with and what was that like for you? What did you learn from that?
I learned how to crash a trailer.
Jeez. They had you driving?
Yeah. Gosh, it's been so long. But by then, I had already been in tons of different variations of bands, but I met a really young, hungry guy named Joey Arena. Amazing dude, still lives in upstate New York, killing the scene in like nu metal. But he saw me play with some other band and he asked me to go on tour with them. And I'd known the band because they had like a good and bad rap all around town for like firing musicians. mainly because he wanted people to take it serious. And I saw that and I was like, he's not a bad guy. He just wants to live a professional life.
Right.
And if you don't take it serious, then get out of my band.
Yeah.
And I was like, I want that. So I rehearsed for like a week. And then our first trip, I got in the van with them and I hadn't slept in like a day. And we drove straight to Marietta, Georgia. So it's a long trip from New York State to Georgia.
Yeah. Yes, it is.
Not sleeping and then playing a show. And then they're like, okay, Rob, you got to drive to North Carolina. And I was like, I've never driven a trailer.
Were the other members of the band older?
Yeah.
So you're young.
I'm a couple years older.
Okay.
I mean, back then, that age gap, you feel like they're so knowledgeable. They've been doing it forever. And, you know, realistically, they've only been doing it a few more years than I had at that time. But those guys became my brothers for years. I still talk to Joey, the leader of the band. And like I said, he's morphed into nu metal now and doing a really good job. Most of his records are produced by JD from Ice Nine Kills.
Oh, wow.
So, like, they're doing very well in upstate. I think he's trying to move to Nashville. He was just here. And, yeah, it was a good time. I was not the musician I should have been for touring. But, I remember getting hired because I was 19. Was the only kid that could play live to a metronome in that town.
Wow.
And they were playing with tracks, you know, stereo, cable out, click right, tracks left.
Wow.
So, yeah.
How did you get good at that? I mean, did you grow up in church or were you just musically like?
At that point, I had been playing at a church for a while. But no, I just practice with a metronome, you know,
so simple. You just practice with a metronome. Yeah, that's literally it.
and I played in a band with an older group, a cover band of guys, and they were much older. And it was just really local, but they loved playing with the metronome. So, like, if it was, like, a song that was just the same tempo the whole time, they're like, just throw on a click, and we'll play to it in the live set. Like, why not? It's not about pride. It's dropping in town. Like, when you're in the moment, sometimes just having that, even if you just start with it, it's nice to be like, it's at 140, so let's make it at 140. Because nerves get in the way of everybody, especially a young drummer.
Oh, yeah. So, and you're in new cities, new venues. Yeah. I mean, there's so much newness to that. you know?
Yeah, and it's like starting a song is the most important. So I say it's like even if you're in a band that doesn't want to use tracks or whatever metronome, it's nice to even just see it blink and you're like, cool. Until you learn to internalize. Like now, you know, I could sing a song or feel the beat of a song and I'm like, okay, that's 130. And it's kind of more natural, just why where somebody can listen and be like, oh, relative pitch. It's like relative tempo is just becomes ingrained the more you use it.
Yeah.
But I'm like, there's no shame like to have that consistency. It's nice as a drummer to kind of, especially if everybody has the metronome, you're like, it's kind of cool. It's just freeing in a way.
Yeah. But it's interesting because it's like, there's obviously like some negative connotation, even with amongst drummers. But it's like, wait a second, that's who we are. Like baseline drummers need to keep the rhythm.
Yeah.
That should be like never second guessed. Oh yeah.
100%.
Play to a click. You know?
You should at least, I think there's a place to play music where there is no click,
yep.
Obviously. But you should never not be able to play to a click. That's
right.
Just literally, yeah, that's an embarrassment.
Yeah.
Like you have to stay, learn to do
like
it.
That just shows that you can't do the job you're supposed to do.
Right. That's one, like you that's one major facet of being a drummer is you're going to keep time.
It's like the guitar player has to play in tune. Like,
right.
That's just how it is.
And everybody needs to be able to play to a click, not just drummers.
Yeah.
But if you're a drummer and you can't play to a click,
Start.
Yeah. Like Rob said, practice. Hey. Like just get in and practice.
Oh my God.
There are apps for that.
They're endless. So, most of them are free. Mm-hmm. Just do it. Learn.
Surprisingly, there's some out there though that have variants. Like they speed up and slow down within a few measures. And you're like, what? How does an app that is a metronome do that?
It must be AI.
I'm like, what if this is bad?
Dude, now I'm getting into like building tracks and logic that have push and pull in it, and really trying to hone in on that. It's getting weird. The tempo things going to another level, boys. Yeah. Let's go.
Yeah. You're taking it there.
Yep.
That like brings up memories of being in jazz band though, and having the teacher going, exactly.
Like the movie
man. Yeah, yeah. But it's true. If you did play in a band, and especially jazz band, the prep has to be like, it's got to stay the same. I'm like, bro, listen to Miles Davis. By the end of a track, it ain't the same.
Yeah.
Like, I don't care. You can listen to the greatest of the greats.
Yep.
By the end, it's burning. Like, and it was just a feel thing. And who cares? Like, as long as you're not uncontrollably from like 130 to 180.
Yeah, it shouldn't be like noticeable.
Yeah.
But that's arguably what made those jazz musicians so great, right? Like their feel and like the emotion.
Yeah.
And having those fluctuations, you know?
Yeah, dude, are you into Weather Report at all?
Oh, yeah.
Dude.
Listen to anything under the sun if I could.
Yeah, buddy. Okay. So, like, have you listened to that live at 8:30, I think it's called? Jocko's on bass, and they play Badia Boogie Woogie Waltz Medley. And it's
I'm going to listen to it tonight now, so.
Dude, it starts pretty quick to start, but, like, by the end, it's just cooking.
See, it's just like, as long as it's a conscious decision, to me, it's all about intention. You know, if you're making the conscious decision and you're not just letting it burn by the end.
Right.
And you're like, hey, it is what it is. If we get there, cool. Then it's like a different world. You know, especially a lot of the students I work with, it's all about the decisiveness. You have to be intentional about what you're doing.
Yeah.
It's just like when you're approaching fills, have that intention. There's a part of improv that's still very intentional, you know, it's the same with keeping tempo or flowing or on the beat, behind the beat, ahead of the beat. It's a decision that you have to make.
Yes.
So.
Yeah. Don't be accidental in those things. I guess, you know, there's in my hometown, there was a lot of like, and I think this is probably true in most people's hometowns. There's so many jam bands. Let's just get together and just jam. Yeah. Let's just have, there's the blues jam, the jazz jam. Like everybody has those. And you would see that happen and see it happen like really accidentally. And then sometimes you go in and it's like really great players and you watch it happen. And you go, that was masterful. That was awesome.
Yeah.
And I almost can't even quantify what that difference is exactly. But you can feel the difference. But I think maybe it's just intentionality.
I would say that's a part of it. Yeah. Like there's interviews with Miles, and you know, if you read anything that he's like written or put together, there's licks that he says, I've used that lick for years. Yeah. And then this is just a variation of that lick. It's in a new key, or I've now put it in, you know, like I've used this lick that's in four and now in over five and now it feels completely different.
Right.
It's like you're using patterns. It's all groups and patterns. And the jam bands, in a way, didn't go home and practice and they have their patterns down.
Right.
So it doesn't happen with that intention. It feels a little bit more loose. But those bands that are well practiced are musicians that have sat in a room and played every permutation known to man. And then they come and bring that there, and now they know how to utilize it appropriately.
Yes.
And it's interesting because improv is definitely comes from like good practice. It's a muscle in the brain.
Yep. Yeah.
And it's like you don't use it. I haven't played in a band where we had full improvisation in a while, other than the drum solos that come up. And in those moments, I play in such a showy band that if the Foxys were like drum solo, it'd be very articulated. It wouldn't be in the moment. It would be very planned out because it's more to me about the show.
Right.
Where the bands where it's like, here's a drum solo, but they're planning out. It's like, oh, I have the groupings and you kind of just flow through it. Those are patterns they've played before.
Yeah.
It's just happening then.
Right. Mm.
But they still have played them. Their hands have played them.
Right.
They're not stepping out of the box.
And what's interesting is, you ever do drum sheds at all?
All the time.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, I have the opportunity now.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I hadn't in a while, but I just started having some more regularly, which has been great.
Oh,
I need to get
you
it on
grow.
That.
Yeah, you do.
Immensely. You grow immensely by failing, too.
And yes. Well, and that's the thing. Shout out to Jake Robinson and 615 Sheds. You're awesome, buddy. But I realized in this, and jumping into this again, because I haven't in years really had like a consistent shed habit or really anybody to shed with on the regular.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, what's the hallmark of what makes it so good for you to do is that you exhaust your ideas.
Yeah.
And then you're like, okay, well, this is my go-to thing. And then suddenly you realize, well, I've done that like five times now.
Yeah.
That's boring.
That's boring.
And then the real improv happens. That is when the new ideas start coming out. Like, okay.
Yeah.
Well, how do I take this and move it?
Right. Like, well, and maybe it's the same idea
orchestrated
flipped,
slightly different. Yeah.
Or maybe it's an all new thing. And then you're also stealing ideas you're seeing. And, mm-hmm. and you're like, okay, how can I want to try that thing. Like, oh, that was a cool little crossover from floor tom mm-hmm. to the crash.
Yeah. Whatever.
How do I use that? Okay. He ended with that phrase. Okay, maybe I can start with something like that and then move it this other way. There's so much value to that, man.
Yeah, it's been a minute. It's a part of my practice routine to throw on a loop track and kind of pinpoint whether I'll be okay. I'm gonna focus on. It doesn't even have to be like a shed loop. It could literally be like a Justin Timberlake song.
Yeah.
And then I go, okay, I'm gonna focus on the vocal melody and I'm gonna start playing my patterns to match the vocal melody well, just ripping over the top of it and accenting the vocal melody with moments and being intentional, there's that word again,
mm-hmm.
intentional about what I'm doing. So then that way when you're playing with someone and you're just having at it, you're like, oh, well, I can now accent the guitar part or the vocal part without losing 2 and 4, important.
Right.
Without losing tempo, also important. And it's like it stems from having that moment of failing and being okay with failing in a room, whether it's with friends or by yourself. But what's awesome about being in that room, too, is that you have the pressure. Whether you feel it or not or you want to admit it or not, you do want to perform well. You do want to do your best and sound good. And then somebody goes, man, you're freaking great.
Yes.
Like you wouldn't be human if you didn't want to do that.
There's almost no better feeling when you get through something like that and – the bass player turns to you and like, dude.
Oh, the stink face, dude. In the middle of it, you're like.
You're like, yeah.
That's the best.
Yeah. That's like.
Thank you.
That's that, like, you suddenly like, man, I got big dick energy all day. This is the best.
Yeah.
I'm the best, bro. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Nah,
it is kind of like that, though.
Yeah, but it helps you in those moments because, I mean, you sit down and the environment between show and practice room is very different.
Yeah.
No matter what, I do have practice routines with my students where distracted practice. Because a lot of them don't have the ability to play in front of people. So we focus on distracted practice, whether it be like trying to have them engage in something else outside of it, while talking while practicing. So looking at me and playing the patterns and talking to me, holding out questions.
That's cool.
Distracted practice is a big part of
distracted practice.
If you can do distracted practice, then you could get into this playing of almost simulating that live distraction because, oh, my kick pedal's loose. Oh, my beater's falling off. My snares are, oh my gosh. And then, oh, my hi-hat's too open. Those things start to pull your brain, that distraction of what the goal is. And the goal is musicality and the moment.
Yeah.
And like, that's where I came up with that. I don't even think I've ever seen people use that, but it just kind of came to me when I was practicing. I would throw on the TV and be very active of like really shedding through my rudiments and like really just focusing and looking back and recording it and be like, did I lose it? Did I stay in? How well did I stay in?
Yeah.
And you're like, interesting.
Man, that's such a great idea. What a cool thought, because there's so much bandwidth that's eaten up by talking. If you
100%.
Even if
talking is the number one, I get students to do it, and it's the easiest way to get somebody lost in what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Yeah.
Like, oh, hey, look at that. You're off the click. Especially, hey, if you're practicing to a gap click.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Like, oh.
Yeah, because then you're relying on yourself keeping this cadencing in your talking while also playing to the tempo and trying to maintain that tempo.
Have you read, I think it's called The Music Lesson, Victor Wooten?
100%.
Okay.
That book is like a Bible. Like, dude, it sits, it literally is in my nightstand.
Love it.
Love it. Well, that, well, that idea that. Of like his mentor. That. Oh, yeah, dude.
It's life-changing.
He talks about his music teacher having like a minutes-long gap click where it's like,
yeah,
he'll just be sitting there having a conversation, then just reach up. And just nail it, like, oh my God.
He does that in his master classes. He'll set to 3 minutes. And then in the middle of it, he'll be like, and it's almost
That's
on
scary.
Every time.
That's
and you're
disgusting.
Just like,
yeah.
I'm like, this dude's got a clock somewhere.
Yeah.
Like,
bro.
It's a wire somewhere. Yeah.
The Wootens, man. Beep. Good God.
Dude, Reggie is so, like, okay, so in the world of music, I think Reggie Wooten is a monster and doesn't have the credibility that he should, the notability, I should say, not credibility.
Yeah.
Like he is a monster.
Reggie is ridiculous. Now this is not shade on Reggie. It's the opposite. He plays in a way that's like purposefully very inaccessible. You know, I've seen multiple times seeing him live. I'm like, he makes decisions that make the nerdiest musicians in the room laugh, because you would have to be so ridiculously good at music and know so much about it to make the decision to play the shit that he does. Like, he'll do something and you watch everyone on the stage go, what?
You guys have to send me some of these videos. I haven't seen this.
What we need to do is just go on Wednesday and watch him play at Rudy's. He plays every Wednesday.
Oh, okay, cool.
And he's amazing.
Monster.
Yeah. Amazing. And he taught Vic everything.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Freaking.
But so like in the music world, people always, it's Victor, Victor, Victor. And I'm like, there's no down on Victor either.
No.
He's a
god. Yeah.
It's just what happens there. There's such freedom in their knowledge too. It's they know so much, but there's just mental freedom. And that breaking of barriers is the biggest thing I work on with students. It's like we have to take this mental barrier and just delete it, like somehow, and start young. Like with some of my youngest students, I'm like, we got to stop. We got to stop whatever this is, these pressures, this going on, like it's a thing. And you know what's crazy? This led me to a thought I had, I held on to, and I'm trying to stay in the moment and listening, not thinking about it. And it came back, you know, growing up, I'm a white guy. It is what it is. 4 on the floor, 2 and 4 on the snare at church, bro.
Yep. Yeah.
You lose that, you're probably gone.
You're gone.
You go to a gospel church, there's a spirit of freedom and fluidity, and it's encouraged.
Yes.
We look at these gospel drummers, these gospel musicians. I can't just say drummers, but we're at a drummer podcast, but they have that level of just go for it.
Yep.
And it's ingrained culturally in what they're doing. And it's like now we're at this cool world where it's like now I want that.
Yes.
I want that so desperately. And that's been the idea of like where I started going with the JT songs. And I was like, I need this freedom of just being able to flow.
Yes.
That state of flow. And you're like, where's that come from? You know?
And it's Howard Artis talked about it when he was here. He was like, it's that thing. And there's a pressure because there's 5 other drummers there all waiting for you to mess up. And the moment you mess up, you're off the kit, yeah, and the next guy's on.
Yeah,
like,
that's what he said.
Yeah.
So it's like, get ready to, you better rip and not make a mistake. Like, go, like, flow, do the thing, and you're under so much pressure at the same time. I'm like, oh my God, that's why you have so many drummers from that scene who are so insane. Not just drummers, like you said, bass players, guitar players, keys.
Across the board, yeah.
Incredible. Just incredible musicianship. Like,
I mean, that's why they rule the pop world.
Like, yes.
It's, yeah. I mean, Justin Bieber's band, Styx. Like,
insane. Dude.
Everyone in that band, they're monsters. Like, people get on me because I play in rock bands, but I'm like, I listen to more live pop music than anything.
Yeah.
Like, every day. I have listened to the same Justin Bieber live concert for almost 2 months, like at least once a week, because there's just so much to learn from those musicians.
What, which concert is it? Yeah.
Well,
I'm writing this down, by the way.
Yeah. Okay. So there's the, it's from his Justice tour, but it's a specific one where they had Jonah come out and like start doing like a whole preachy moment. And you're like, this is so weird at a concert.
Yeah.
But he does. He has a pastor come out, and you're like, I guess this is cool. Like, take your platform and use it. Like, you are not being harmful, so do it.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think it's just Justice Tour, and I can't remember. But there's in the main picture, there's just two big crosses in it, and it's just mind blowing. Like everything, every moment, the talking, the speaking, that's why when I'm working with these artists, I'm like, we need to stop this. Singer-songwriter song. This is the song. Song. This is the song. Song. Because it bleeds into musical moments on stage. And I'm like, I get the idea of interacting, and there's moments for that. There's times for that. But there's still musical moments that could implement that. We can implement the speaking with the musical moments and stop this like emptiness and awkward banter.
Yeah, and the 1, 2, 3, 4.
I saw Gwen Stefani recently. Yeah, exactly that too. Like there's so many tricks I've got to avoid that as well that I could share with either of you or anyone. Yeah. But I just played out in California last week. We opened for Gwen Stefani and
awesome.
Yeah, and oh my God. I'm not joking. I'm an emotional person. I was crying. She is a goddess. And the band was unreal. Unreal. So amazing. The engineer, dude, I was like in tears just thinking about what the front of house guy was doing.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Okay. This dude, the electronic drum triggers and the electronic drum samples on the tracks, it was almost seamless. He'd start a drum fill on the high tom. Drums were booming loud. By the end, it was track drums, and the acoustic drums were faded out in perfect time. Whoa. So you didn't lose them. It was like, and you were like, whoa. The acoustic drums were just gone. He was just actively pulling the faders down. You're like, wow. This is a show.
Every detail.
This is a show.
That is artistry from the audio engineer. Wow.
And I'm just saying, that is the difference. That is the tier. Yeah. And me is like, as a drummer, I think, you know, how do we as drummers also approach that bench? You know, like, I'm not going to be a front house guy. I don't care. I will probably interact. That's my personality, being a music director and being able to coach the engineers and things that I want. And I do that with the Foxys. We have moments where I want flooded reverb for her vocals just to go crazy and hard panning. And then I want it hard cuts. And I'll talk to the engineers and get them involved in that. But it's just like this, the level of shows. We're at this point where we have more control than we ever have at every tier.
Yeah.
So why aren't we doing that in utilizing that? So, yeah.
Dude, I love that.
Yeah, if you're not utilizing that, you're simply leaving so much artistry on the table.
Yeah.
You could take a
plain show with plain songs and just enhance them to the next tier. You know, like, it could be the simplest track ever. You could be playing 2 and 4 the whole song, and how do we get it to that next level as musicians without overdoing it or overdoing it? Who cares if that's the moment? You know, it's like, how do we take everything we're doing to that next tier? And it's like, that's why when people look at what I set up, you know, when I do play Broadway or gigs like that, they're like, man, you bring all that stuff? And I was like, here, always, just right here. Like, I bring my TM6 electronic rig, because we play so many pop songs where playing the snare drum's too much. Playing the rim is not the right sound. Yeah. Playing that stack is good, but not it. So I bring my one pad to get a clap and a snap. It's like,
see, that's serving the music.
I'm here to play, not here to just collect. I love what I do. I'd rather spend my whole 30 or 15 minutes, realistically, when the other drummer gets off, to set up the whole set and to be mildly stressed.
Yeah.
To get it set up to do the things I want. To be able to have the musical voicings I want on the kit. It's like, why not?
This is something that I've talked about a lot with my mentor, Seth Carlson. And he was like, I would rather build a show that's going to be awesome and have too many people on the show. I would rather have the personnel that I want with the gear that I want and have us not really get paid, than to build a show that's like, well, yeah, well, at least now we can make some money doing this. It's like, I want to build a show that I can be proud of.
Yeah.
That's what I want. I'm like, once you've done that, that will make money eventually. If it's really good, people will want to see it. People will want to hear it. That's it. Yeah. It doesn't work the other way around.
Yeah.
People are like, oh, yeah, that was okay. You guys were like, you were good, but kind of. The sound wasn't awesome. It was like, no. If you came in like Snarky Puppy is the example.
My whole way home yesterday, Snarky Puppy.
Yeah.
Like live Snarky Puppy. I just was like sitting there in my bunk just doing this. I was just like, next.
Yep.
Amazing. But sorry. Yeah. But,
I mean, they played their first show. This is what I've heard. And maybe somebody can correct me if this is not correct, but it's what I've always heard. They played their first show in the basement of a pizza parlor. And they had their whole huge crew there. People were like, who in the hell are you guys? They came in tight. They came in as Snarky freaking Puppy. They just came in and destroyed it. Imagine seeing that and having them be like, this is our first show. Disgusting. You got way too many. There's no way you're going to make money on that. They're for sure going backwards, but it's like, but we're making a statement. Mm-hmm. And now they're everywhere.
Exactly.
A bunch of Grammys. They're like, well, obviously.
Yeah, no,
because you built something amazing.
Yeah.
So, dude, I'm loving it. This is super inspiring to hear. I mean, for younger drummers, because you mentioned that you seem to think that maybe, like, why don't more drummers kind of think that way? You know, what do you think we need to do to, is it education? Is it just a mindset of like taking it away from just playing the drums and having a good show versus thinking about the entire show and the musicians and the audience and, you know, everything?
It's a hard question because, like, not everyone is going to want that. Like, you're going to have your players that just want to do their thing.
Yeah.
But, I mean, just encouragement to, like, really take it back. Like, if you were to ask us and everyone else that you know as musicians, the pivotal moment where music was speaking to you. Not the drums, not the instrument of choice.
Music.
Music. Like, I remember before I even had drums, sitting downstairs pretending I was in the Backstreet Boys with my best friend. We'd be sitting down there singing and just and having a blast. And it was so, I would say, spiritual, so awakening. There was a moment where you're just like, wow, this is, and I didn't want to do that. At that age, it wasn't, this is what I want to do. I loved it. Music is something that binds everyone in this world, whether we like country, rap, hip, there's something so moving about music. Mm-hmm. And then when you pick up an instrument, it becomes so focused. It's the drums. So you become, I'm a drummer. Right. I gotta play crazy fills. I gotta impress. I gotta do fast things. And it's the same thing. Like, you have these young students, they get that pressure of, I have to play fast because it's impressive.
Rudiments, who are your favorite drummers? Not musicians, but it's always
drummers. Yeah. And it's just like,
we take it too far sometimes.
Exactly. I think it's kind of ingrained culturally as well, but there's something, it's kind of an encouragement of like, let's go back to where we started.
Yeah.
Falling in love with the music. I don't care if you like country. There's something in that. Mm-hmm. And I know I had an easier time because my dad, when I was younger, when I got my drum set, said he would turn the radio on and I'd have headphones and he would be like, play this song. Then he would switch to another channel, play this song. Switch to the music. And I was like, I don't know it, but I was forced to learn it.
Shout out to freaking dads doing that.
Yeah, yep. Right?
Yep.
It was your dad, a similar kind of situation.
Like, learn it.
Yeah.
There's something to be like, learn from your learnt. Learn.
Get learnt.
Yeah. My brain wanted to say learnt as just a fun, just like, it needs to be learnt.
You've got to be learned.
Hey, drummers. Do you need a place in Nashville to practice on actual drums? Drumbox is Nashville's newest drum practice studio. Book sessions online and get the space to yourself. It's fully equipped with two kits, cymbals, hardware, and even sticks are provided. 30-minute, 1-hour, and 2-hour sessions are available at www.drumbox.space. And use the coupon code NDP25 for 25% off your first session. Again, that's www.drumbox.space.
And now I'm trying to be like, maybe I should just like put it up during shows and use live content. And that's kind of it. And I was like, you know what? I just kind of want to post pictures of what I do and say, fuck it, I'm already doing it. Yeah. Like, so like, I don't care how many people follow me on there. I'm like, I'm already professionally doing this, have been. So I'm like, well, I don't need the social numbers.
Right. That's
personally.
True.
I'm just like, eh. And it works for me because I can't balance it. I was diagnosed with OCD like 3 years ago. And I've always kind of known because I get very anxious and very irritable, but I've never realized until being in the Foxys how that can impact other people.
Mm.
And it can be toxic at times because you want to control every situation.
Right.
So, once I kind of got that notion, I never really like went through with the rest of the doctor visits of trying to figure out the nuances of it.
Yeah.
My doctor pretty much said, have you ever considered smoking drugs? And I said, I don't really do that very well because it makes me more controlling. Yeah. And he's like, just, okay, well, don't do that.
That just cranks my anxiety up. But thanks for the suggestion, Doc.
Yeah, yeah. I was like, I thought we were in Tennessee. This is not condoning that. That's exactly how he said it. Yeah. It was a good question. It's encouraging young students to like really dive back into the roots of music and loving music as a whole. If you stop thinking about what you're currently doing and think about the big picture, it also helps you with form. It helps you with tempo. It helps you with everything because you're, you know, as drummers, we have four brains, but really there's that fifth brain where you're above it all, seeing it all come together, where you could see the bigger picture. So you learn something with your right brain and your left brain, and then you forget it by getting out here. Yeah. So it becomes where you can now play this pattern fluidly because you're not in your right brain. You're, again, up here. So those patterns become together. It, you know, when you're watching a student or someone learn something for the first time, they get it, and then it wobbles out because they're starting to look at one side, and then the other side starts to falter, and then you're like, you got to get back out here where you can see it as the big picture. You know, it's a simple 3/2 polyrhythm. You know, like it's way easier than you think, but for a young student right off the bat, they're just like, how do I do this?
Right.
And you're like, you got to step outside the box and hear the big form of it. You know, it's like counting. I heard the podcast with Virgil, where he was saying the importance of counting. The conceptualization, even there, like counting becomes so in the moment, and then you need to learn to, again, step out of it to feel large form.
Right.
And then that comes to the music side. When you're playing the drums, you're playing the pattern, but how does that fit with the large form of the band, the orchestration of the band? Is this, I don't need to be playing Phil Collins in the air, Phil's in every song.
Right.
You know, it just doesn't fit. So then you take that and you encourage them to think of music rather than their instrument, you know? And again, it's all about encouragement because I think there's a lot of mental pressure on everyone. So you don't want to be like, you have to think about this, you know? So
that's very well said. Are you a baseball fan?
I mean, I love sports.
Yeah.
I appreciate sports.
I was just thinking of like the catcher, right? Like the catcher and the drummer, they're behind the plate. Like they have to be very good at that specific position, as drummers have to be good at on the drums. Like you're saying, to take a step back.
Yeah.
Like the catcher has the unique position to see every position, the whole field, literally.
Yeah.
Even the audience, right? Having that balance.
I've never even thought of that, but that's awesome.
Yeah. We are the catchers behind the drums.
Love it.
Yeah, people especially always ask about sports.
Role, you know?
And I'm like, I don't particularly watch sports, but I value, because they're in the same position we are. They're practicing. They're working on their craft. It's people that work and dig into their crafts that I love. And, you know, like when you say stuff like that, I'm like, it gives you a deeper appreciation for what they're doing. So
yeah, you're in a similar boat. Like, you're not a huge sports fan, but like, and sports comes up a lot on this podcast because we pull away those traits of
yeah,
what makes 100%. People successful, the Kobe Bryants of the world.
Yep.
Not because they can put a basketball in the net, but
right.
it's all about the effort and their routines and mentalities.
The way they think about it. And I'm actually, one thing that I'm pulling from right now, inspiration-wise, is I'm actually watching an anime called Blue Lock.
I love anime, by the way.
Have you checked out Blue Lock?
I have not.
It's awesome. It's all about soccer. The whole premise for anyone that wants to get into it is a bunch of soccer players in Japan get invited to this thing called Blue Lock, and they are going to turn someone in there into the world's best striker. So like a Cristiano Ronaldo or a Messi or someone like that. We're going to build the best striker, and everyone other than that person will going forward be disallowed to play soccer for Japan. Ever. So they're like, and you can leave or you can start the program. And it's all about, each of them is obsessed with the craft, and they portray it. Obviously it's an anime. It's, you know, it's going to be crazy, but the way that they take these characters through thinking about the craft of playing soccer, what that entails, like, well, every detail of it, it's so inspiring. And I watch it as I'm like practicing. I'm like,
yeah. Distracting.
Yes. Like, it's a great idea. It's a really, really cool thing. And anybody who's doing that, the reality is there are people, there are the Kobe Bryants, the Steph Currys of the world who are doing that. I'm going, well, how do I make this better? And they did this to begin with. Like, how do I make this better until they're world class? And even once they're world class, they're still going, how do I make it better?
Yeah.
Yeah.
What fat can I trim from this? And that's, you get monsters. So Steph, I've said it, I'm like, he's not the greatest player of all time, but he's almost certainly the greatest shooter of all time.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Basketball, like, unmatched.
Yeah.
So.
Well, I think it's a tough balance because, like, you know, we're taught to be the best individually, you know, on our instrument and then in sports too. So you do have to spend that time alone. But then, yeah, you have to think of the bigger picture, right? The team, the teammates, or the other band members in this case.
Yeah.
So how do you balance that? Like, being the best drummer, but then, you know, taking a step back, as you've said a few times already, just like, okay, well, what is my role? I'm doing all these things, and I'm doing, practicing rudiments, I'm setting up the tracks, but like, it's all for this greater purpose than just the drums. It's, you know, the band, the show, the tour.
I think that's, again, like, it's all about... It's the balance too. Like, yeah. I found myself in the world where we were just discussing it, like the whole VF15 era, where content, TikTok, all this stuff where we feel these pressures. And I took a long break from that. I still haven't even come back to making content, but I wanted to be on the Modern Drummer. I wanted to be on like anything that was notable for a drummer, that I wanted to be known in the, you know, the top tier drummers.
So you wanted to be on this podcast, is what you're saying?
Yeah, 100%. Like, it was my life goal.
Back then.
So not that I wouldn't want to be now, and I'm not saying, I still have those moments where I was like, I want to be better. I need to be better. But now it's like, I want to make music. And like, I'm not going to say I'm a songwriter's drummer because I have a lot of technical skill that at times comes out and then is dormant for times. It's just a balance. You know, you have to be good at what you are and your craft and your instrument, so knowing it up and down. But a great example of why knowledge isn't always super important, you know, you watch some of these drummers that we'd already talked about. Eric Moore is a freaking monster. That dude's hands are ungodly. We talked about this at coffee. Yep. But the man has, like, his knowledge isn't perfect. Right. You know, he'll talk about, well, that was a triplet. And I'm like, it was 16th notes in triplet groupings, but it was still 16th notes. And I was like, you were playing groupings of four, but, you know, your phrasing had three. So
yeah.
That's where we're going. So it wasn't a triplet. Right. You're still playing the 16th note grouping there.
Well, same thing. Thomas Pridgen on his Drumeo thing was like, this is a, you know, you're playing 5/4. And I was like, you're playing a 5-stroke roll, which is... Six notes. Like,
yeah.
Like, because there's a one note rest. That's not 5/4. Like,
yeah.
Like, But
you're still God.
Yeah, you're still
amazing.
Still would smoke me in a drum shed.
It's just a show that like you can sit in a room, read a book, and then the knowledge is sometimes useless. And it's like you said it earlier. There's no right or wrong path. That wasn't how you phrased it, but essentially, one person's path isn't the other. Maybe you said that. I'm not sure, but it was said earlier that like everyone's paths are kind of different, and that could even be like for me, my brain is just stay present. You know, this is constant recurring sentences that we're saying, but stay present in your own life, in your own practice time. It's like, what do you need for this time? I need to be a better drummer.
Yeah,
I need to be a better musician. I need to be a better band leader. Whatever your role is, own it. You know, that's what they did in their craft. That's why Curry is so amazing at shooting. He found out what he was good at, and he probably exploited the crap out of it.
Yes.
And it worked, but he was still a team player. The man brought so many wins to every team he's ever played for because he played as a team.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So that's that balance. You know?
Beautifully said.
Well, and the cool thing is that applies to literally everything.
Everything.
Because your craft can be like, well, you know what my craft is? And I'm sure you agree on this and this to bring it full circle. My craft is a husband.
Yeah.
I'm like, yeah, well, what do I need to do to be a better communicator? What do I need to do to become more patient? What do I need to practice in order to listen better?
Mm.
Like those are all, treat those like a craft.
Yeah.
And suddenly you're leveling up in just life.
Yeah.
It's awesome. It's the best feeling.
I constantly get a little like concerned when I meet people that don't have this innate desire to be better. Hmm. I meet someone and I'm like, how did you get this far?
Right.
Like I've worked with a few that are just like talented and then they live that talent and you're like, oh, part of me wishes you wouldn't succeed, but I wouldn't say that, but I'm just saying, you're just like, how did you get here?
Dude.
Like how, I don't get it. When you work with them and you're trying to help them and develop them and then telling them to do this work and they look at you as if like you're on drugs and you're just like, no, like work ethic goes way further than anything else.
Yeah.
I was like, put the effort in.
Yeah.
Dude, so there's a guy I used to train with back in California, one of my best friends, his name's James. He would tell you that, and he'd be correct in saying that he's one of the most talented people that you'll ever just encounter, period.
Yeah.
He is. He just straight up, he's a really brilliant dude and physically just a monster. Any athletic endeavor he would jump into, he would just dominate.
Oh.
Just freakish talent. So strong, like when you would look at him, you would not think, oh, this guy would tear my arms off, but he 100% would. I remember we would go and like lift weights and we'd we call it the flip gym, like go do the gymnastics thing and like practice flips and whatever. And there was a guy who came and trained with us who I would go as far to say he was probably the least talented in the group. But whenever he would go, I would watch him practicing the same backflip over and over. And I didn't see him for like a year and a half, 2 years. And I came into the gym one day and I saw him, one, super jacked. He had gotten insanely jacked, super tan. He looked awesome. And I was like, dude, you look great, man. How you been? He's like, oh, you know, just doing the thing. He had like a Yogi Bear voice. His name was Aaron. Oh, you know, just training. Are you always in here? I'm like, you still go to the flip gym? He goes, yeah, man. Now I'm teaching the class over there. I'm like,
wow.
Now you're the teacher.
Yeah.
Interesting. And then I was like, oh, well, like, did you ever get the one arm pull up down? Because we had always talked about doing that. He's like, yeah. What?
It's like cold face.
Yeah. He goes, in fact, I would do it right now, but I just trained biceps. And then he goes, you know what? Actually, and he grabs, I think it was a 25. And proceeds to do a one arm pull up with a 25 in his other hand. I was like, yo, that's consistency. And that's why I'm like, I will never. When I go down a path, I'm like, that's the path I'm going down till I get where I'm going. The end. Because that guy exists. And he outdid my buddy James, whose physical talent is freakish and who is not, he would admit to you, he's like, I haven't really done anything with it. Like, yeah. But he could have been in the Olympics.
My best friend is that exact way. He's amazing. And and I tell him all the time, I'm like, you could do anything. He's finally starting to it's been a few years. I think once he met his wife, it's always the woman, right?
Yep.
She just honed in on him and now he's just killing it in life. And it makes me happy because when you meet someone that is good, you just want them to have that same hunger. My dad's always had the eye for that. Because I've worked with some people and he's like, no, they don't have that. They don't have that Mike Tyson hunger where you're just a monster, you know, where you're going to go after it with everything you got. Yeah. And that's what we in the music industry need. Like the industry needs people that are just diehard and ready to go for it. And it's at all tiers, at different types of tiers too. Like, because you're going to get people that aren't and that are just talented, but like to constantly, I'm same, like postural, you know.
Yep.
Yeah. Right? Instantly, we all just go, probably should. But just like that hunger is just, we just need to keep invoking that in the younger students, the younger generation. Get to that point where now I'm all thinking about everyone else. And I think maybe when I stepped into the music direction world where I love being able to meet with new artists and help them grow their show and like gave me a different perspective of what I want to do and comfortable in where I'm at. You know, that's a big key too, is just being comfortable where you're at. You'll just drive yourself nuts if you want, and you're like, why am I not there?
And to bring it back to social media, you know, it's another segue. Like that's where it's so unhealthy. It's so just toxic because, I mean, there's something to be said, right? You're just like turning off social media and just silently practicing and like becoming unrecognizable in a year, like to bring it back to your friend there at the gym. Like, you didn't see him for a year, but he was plugging away. He didn't care about any distractions, or maybe he did, but he kept at it.
Didn't let him stop it.
And then and now look at him, you know, he's a teacher.
Yep.
That's such a cool story.
Yeah. Imagine what you could be if you took one full year of just sitting in a room and taking all the different practice routines and gigging. Gigging's that definite importance, but
yes. Yeah, it's just a weird balance. I mean, everything comes back to that word balance, and because like social media comes up a lot on this podcast, and like I work in marketing and social media, so like I have a love-hate relationship with it for sure, but definitely err on the side of the benefits of it.
Oh, 100%.
Of course. But it's like, you know, using social media while you're in the middle of your career trying to get the gigs versus like just getting the gigs and not worrying about, then you have that platform. It's like, what comes first, the chicken or the egg? You know, it's tough.
Yeah.
And I think it's really different for everybody.
Exactly.
Right? As we said earlier, like somebody could be a TikTok or Instagram sensation and, you know, then they have to go and woodshed for a bit, you know, actually get better because they filmed 1 minute clips.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and there have been obviously
plenty of those.
There are in the music world, many such social media sensations who are, and this is not throwing shade at anybody in particular, nothing, but there are for sure such people that they post their clip, edit the bejeezies out of it. And it's like, well, this person couldn't actually even perform that live. Correct. Like, well, you're kind of screwed.
What are we doing here? Yeah.
Yeah. I'm like, well now, like maybe that's, if that's you, maybe now your practice is that, like, well now,
you should probably get
work on making it so that you can actually play it like that.
That would be great.
Right. Get that down. Unless maybe your whole thing is like, I just want to make videos and, you know, make money off of YouTube ads or something. I don't know.
And you look at someone like Casey Cooper, who's literally made his entire career off that. And that's great. Like that's, you know, but he has such a love for inspiring other drummers and like that community sense. So nothing against him, but
no, not at all.
And even someone like Grayson DeKrootman, right?
Yeah.
Like literally was discovered during COVID through his social media videos. And a lot of and he's a Pearl guy, of course, and a lot of negative feedback at times is like, oh, well, he doesn't have a gig. Like, let's see this translate.
And now he does.
Now he does. Suicidal tendencies. I think he's he's
suck it, everyone who said that, you know, guy wouldn't gig.
Yeah, he's on his first tour now.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's, I think these days it's more complex of what that answer looks like. Like you really can kind of make it work for you. It's not like it doesn't have to be, well, I'm deleting all my social, like my favorite post to see is like, hey everyone, I'm deleting my social media for the next month.
Yeah.
But like they're making that announcement on Instagram. It's kind of like, don't even do that. Just do it.
Just Irish goodbye.
Yeah.
Don't say anything. Yeah. Just
it's like leave the account up for 24 hours to see who likes it. It's like, well, you're missing the point already. Like,
yeah,
whatever.
And those people that do that are usually the people that are, that aren't posting consistently and really engaging with their people anyway.
Yeah.
I feel like in a way, like even if you did the Irish goodbye, the algorithm wouldn't screw you because you're kind of there. But the people that are, I think that may be needed for someone who, like, their posts are important. Like, we were talking about, what's his name? Wojtek?
Derek.
Yeah. Like, if he were to just stop posting.
You'd be like, wait, where'd he go?
Where'd he go?
Where's the lick of the day, my guy?
Yeah, there's an importance to what he's doing and like, the consistency, the algorithm has got him. So there's that moment where, yeah, you should probably.
I want to see him on a gig, though. Maybe he has one, but I haven't seen.
Bro,
we're talking about the same guy, right?
Yeah, WOJ.
Yeah. He's got a gig.
Does he? Okay.
Yeah, he plays with a pop artist from his country.
Okay, cool.
Oh, nice.
And I've seen live videos of the whole thing, and he's great.
I'm sure he just smashes. He's great. Yeah.
Perfect. Okay, that makes me happy.
Yeah. It's interesting. Because with socials, like, I constantly feel almost the pressure to get back on. It's not that I'm off. I just post just the things that I've done, like the tours that I've been on recently and what I'm about to do. And I'm like, oh, I should probably just get on a good schedule of posting at least photos, you know, just something and just even just a document and not less for them, but more for me and documenting where I'm at.
Yeah, like a scrapbook. Yeah.
And it feels healthy to me because it's not about capturing. Where it just got very unhealthy for me is why I jumped off.
Yeah.
I felt it was dictating my whole life, and I didn't like it. I didn't like the way it felt. It felt icky, and I was like, I got to get rid of this.
Yeah.
And now it's like, cool, I don't need that for my personal experience. You know, I met enough people, and, you know, I moved to Nashville with the idea of, getting a gig and playing for an artist. I never dreamt of being in another band again. I actually came here with the intention of never doing it.
Yeah.
And then I saw the singer of my band, and I was like, I need to be in that band.
Here we go.
Yeah.
And it is what it is.
She's got the charisma.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't be in it this long with the ups and downs that every band gets.
Yeah.
Granted, it's been a lot more ups than anything, so.
That was my next question, actually. I was going to segue into the Foxy specifically.
Yeah, yeah.
Because, you guys have been through a lot. I saw you guys at Live in the Green. Mm-hmm. That was my first show seeing you guys in the Basement East.
Dang, yeah.
You guys were opening for Billy Idol in Germany. Like, yeah, talk us through, like, how you joined the band. Were you the first drummer and kind of what's been going on since?
It's going to make me seem toxic. I was not the first drummer.
Yeah.
I actually got approached to do a tour with the band because the drummer they had was not available. And I said, I don't want to do it unless I'm going to be your full-time drummer. I kind of forced the guy out of the gig. I said, your drummer's not the dude. He's not paying attention to the bigger picture. He's got a 311 crank snare drum, and your record is all 80s blown out fat snare drum. He's not even paying attention to the nuances of the snare drum, let alone the big picture of the show. He was also building their tracks at the time, and good guy, good drummer, not the guy for the gig.
Right.
Yeah.
And he had other gigs, so it wasn't like I was like kicking him out. He was kind of just in this job. I wasn't just getting him fired. So it was more along those lines. I just want the gig. You want a full-time drummer. I'm either your full-time guy or no, I don't want the tour.
I don't think there's anything wrong with that at all.
No, yeah, but sometimes in radio interviews when Julia says it, sometimes it makes it just seem like I just got the guy canned, and I'm like, put it on the record. It was pretty like,
dude. Well, you know what? my mentor Seth Carlson. Shout out to Seth. His wife Beth.
Beth and Seth.
Beth and I know, right? I know. Their internet name at home Wi-Fi is Speth.
That's funny.
Amazing.
So when they were young, they got married young, but they kind of had like the childhood crush thing and then, you know, dated other people. And then she was dating a dude and he literally went to the guy and said, that's cool that you're like dating Beth and all. Let me know when you're done so that I can have a serious relationship with her.
Wow.
Like, the balls, first Literally, of all, yeah. to do that. But like, it's the same thing. You're like, hey, I'm actually serious about that thing. Mm-hmm. So if you don't have to take me, but
yeah, it's there.
If you want me for this one thing, I need the entire thing. That's totally fair.
Yeah. I love that though. Cause I mean, the way you're describing it, like you were coming from a place of, you just cared so much about the gig. You saw like that professionalism that, you know, you like, you were so confident in it, mm-hmm. you know, that was probably a very, attractive quality that they saw in you.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, at the time she was signed to a deal with the McGee brothers who ruled the management industry. And I mean, Kiss, Darius Rucker, Motley Crue, like their names went through the roof. So like, it was such an interesting first time. Cause after I did that, then I had to completely shift gears because now I was the new guy and I had to like earn my right. Cause these guys have been around. I mean, it came to one gig where, our now day-to-day manager, our manager now was there, our day-to-day at that office. And he came up to me after one gig and said, you know, that little 12-8 fill you did there, never do that again. And I was like, cool.
Yeah. Yeah. Right.
Okay. It wasn't 12-8, but okay.
Let's go.
Actually, no. So if false, it was. He said 3-4, and it was 12-8. So I was just like,
classic non-drummer musician.
Yeah. And I actually, you know, jokes on him. I actually continue to play it, but not on the toms, on the hi hat.
That's
in the same spot.
Yeah. That's amazing. You outsmarted him.
Yeah. I just hit it. Slightly less loud.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's like, it messed her up all the time. And I was like, it never messed her up, but I'll accept and hide it.
Wow.
I love it. You're like, but in my musical opinion, it belongs. So I'll just alter it so that it's acceptable.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't put it in the recording. I just did it live because it was like, it was fun.
It just fit.
Yeah. It just was musical.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, 12-8 fits just fine over 4-4. It is what it is.
Yeah.
Yeah. But.
So what year was this all happening that you joined?
2016 was about the time, so what, that was many moons ago now.
Yeah. And what kind of shows were you guys doing at that point? Was it?
My first show with them was South by Southwest, so we went straight into it.
Yeah.
We played, and then shortly after that was Sundance, so we played big festivals, like, right off the get. We weren't on any major tours, but we were doing a lot of solo tours, but we played everything and anything we could get in Nashville, and at that time there was not a lot of pop, let alone, like, punky kind of bands, so like we stood out, you know, and her hair stood out. So it was like easy for us to become one of the newer and bigger bands of that genre twist, because Nashville has shifted. It's not solely country, it's so much more now.
Totally.
Thank God.
Yeah, 100%. Awesome. I love it. And we have definitely been on big tours, small tours, even, you know, like right after the Billy tour, we did a little short run personally, and it's crazy to go from, you know, 17,000-18,000 to the back to your roots where you're like, okay, we've never played in Idaho. Oh, I mean, we have, but you know, you go there and you're like, hey, there's like 100 people here. Yeah. Like, oh yeah, this is where we're at.
Oh,
like,
damn, dude. But 100 people at your show? Freaking yeah, let's go.
That was a couple different examples, but yeah.
I just played a gig with Jake actually at Whiskey Jam. I was like, I was thinking the whole time, like, for him to come, you know, off tour in Germany or wherever you guys were, and then to play Whiskey Jam, it's like, wait a second.
Yeah, I mean, it's like my boy Andrew, which you guys know, Andrew Grasso.
Yeah,
You know, like coming off this gig with Gale, which he's a great drummer, and then he comes and still plays with all the local guys. I'm like, I love it. You know, his spirit, it, like an example of like, it is what it is. You love it. It shows that he loves what he does, 100%. And it doesn't matter.
Jake Summers, same thing. He'll play out, come off of Luke and play on Broadway.
Yeah, it's like it's so cool. It's not about the money either at that point. It's kind of just like, I just love doing what I do.
Yeah.
And that's to me why it's like, where the Foxys are at such a point where I don't have the luxury of playing with other people as often. That's why I was like, what capacity can I still work with other people? You know, but we're actually about to leave on June. We're in June, right? No, June's coming up.
June's
so
coming
May 31st, we fly out to Frankfurt. And we're playing a bunch of festivals all over the EU. And then That's with a bunch of bands, and yeah. I'm excited to see Incubus.
Oh my God.
Oh man.
Live from Side Stage. They're my favorite band since a kid. So
top five for me.
Yeah.
My first ever Modern Drummer magazine that was purchased for me by my mom, almost certainly by my mom, was Jose Pacias.
Yeah. You talked about that in this podcast.
He is such a creative drummer. Like in technical skill, like he's good. He's great. He's got good hands. Not like insane, but he's musical.
Parts,
yes.
Like when you hear his parts in simple songs, like you're just like, whoa. And like, no offense to them on their newest record, but when I heard the newest record, 8, I was like, it doesn't feel like Jose played on this record.
Right.
And, like, but yeah, I'm like mind blown. I love that band and I've seen them so many times, but I'm like, I will be Side Stage, 100%. I will eyes glued. Like every night on Billy Idol, like we all at some point just were the first few nights in the US when we went to the US half, we were just watching every time. Like as soon as we could be, I was just like, is Billy Idol?
Yeah. Like it's a freaking legend.
And Steve Stevens, such an underrated guitar player, literal monster. Like he never got the credit he deserved. Mm. Like the dude played the theme song to Top Gun. And I'm like, what? He's a monster. He's a literal monster.
Yeah.
Play like, yeah, shreds. But and then the later half, we're doing a bunch of shows with Guns N' Roses, so that'll be sick. Interesting.
Wow.
Yeah, fun.
That is wild.
Yeah.
I can't wait to hear what that is like. That's gonna be
It's gonna be crazy.
If you ever want to do an Instagram Live while you're watching Incubus,
it'd
be a good chance for us to see.
Yeah.
You know, maybe not for the whole thing. I just watched Wage War, which was awesome. Went with my buddy Clay Franz. Shout out to Clay. Love you, buddy. And there was a guy live streaming the whole concert. I'm like, I want to beat the shit out of you.
Please stop.
Yeah, stop. Stop that right now.
Dude, Third Eye Blind, there's like a live show where he, in the middle of the Semi-Charmed, like stops and the band's just kind of vamping on the low section. And he's like calling out this guy for, he's like trying to like video. I guess he was videoing most of the time. He's like, I know you want to get the moment. He's like, you want to capture the moment, but the only way to get the moment is to be present here with the rest of the people. And he's like, I know you're upset. Cause they literally went to the ramping up to the last chorus and the drummer just goes, stops straight back down. And you're just like, they literally were about to hit the biggest part of the chorus and they come straight back down. And everybody's like,
goodbye. Bye. Hold on. Put your phones down.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that, and he does thrash bands that use tracks. So I was like, I'm going to disregard that part.
Yeah.
He's like, we're not a DJ rock band. We're a guitar rock band.
Dude.
And I was just like, I get it, but some people need to hire bands, and some bands can't afford that. So you can.
Exactly.
Third Eye Blind.
Yeah.
Which I love. No hate. Yeah. Literally one of my favorite bands of all time.
Yes.
But I can't hire a keyboard player. Sorry.
Yeah.
It's true.
Like, it's all about, like, being able to pay the musicians. Like, it is. If I could, I'd have everyone in the band, and we'd play to a click, and that's it.
Yeah.
Like I would. I would love to take the drum sequencing out and everything else in there as much as I could. That's why I bought all the equipment I bought, so I could stop putting drum samples in there and start triggering them to put the performance back in my hands.
Yes.
You know? So, yeah. That's another rabbit hole.
Yeah,
we can't go now.
we probably should, or maybe next time.
Yeah.
Well, at this point, I would say we're definitely going to have a next time because there are conversations that just flow so easily that I'm like, oh, yeah. We got to do this again.
Follow up.
Is like for sure.
Yeah.
Part two.
This is so
part
fun,
three.
Yeah.
Part 40. Like Rocky.
Rocky. Yeah.
Serving the Nashville, Brentwood, and Franklin areas, Music Lab Nashville offers comprehensive hands-on music lessons in contemporary techniques and styles. Students learn from the most qualified instructors in state-of-the-art practice and performance settings. All ages, all styles, all levels. Visit nashville.musiclab.co to learn more and to sign up for a free trial lesson.
Well, I want to go back to something you said at the beginning of the podcast.
Let's do
it. We were talking about, you know, just touring at 19 and all that and your first shows. You said like you're happiest on stage or something to that effect.
Yeah.
Take us into those emotions for you. What is it about the live show? And do you do sessions as well? Like, are you studio guys?
Yeah. When I'm in town, I have a setup at home. I do whenever it happens, it happens. Yeah. For a while, I was doing a lot more. I was doing a lot online. And then, but honestly, it just came down to the fact that I'm in town so little. So, like, I'm maybe every week in town for like 3-4 days. So it's like maybe 3 at the most.
Yeah.
So it's just like, and I got other stuff I'm doing. So unless the session's like really, I wouldn't say here, I'm just like, I'm not like actively pursuing it.
Yeah.
So when somebody approaches it, I would say like once a month, I'm definitely tracking at least 2 or 3 times.
Yeah.
But yeah, I focus most of my stuff on like building shows and like including gear. Like I've been getting into doing custom cases and building full rigs for people. Yeah. So when I come to MD and help, it's a package, you know? Like you can get me to build your tracks rig, your ears rig, everything, and like build it. Like I've been working with the artist Adam Sanders, Dylan Carmichael, Country Guys, and then some other pop artists that are amazing who aren't doing shows, but even programming lights. Like it's a full thing that I do. So
is this all self-taught? Where did all this sort of come from? And I know maybe from, like for me, like, and a lot of drummers, like it's kind of like a ladder, right? Like you learn maybe this summer is Ableton, next summer, like it's not like everything has to be learned at once, right?
It kind of came in, like I had a friend early when I moved here say, hey, I want to do a light show for my, my first show in Nashville. And I was like, okay, what do you need? And he's like, well, I'm going to buy Ableton. You think you can learn it? And I was like, well, I've already used Ableton, so I know Ableton, but the light show thing, that's weird. So many hours of sitting on the internet and not finding diddly, and it was more just failing miserably on how to program lights on Ableton.
Yeah.
And then after that, I just got hired for more and more gigs to do lights, so that kind of progressed. And then they didn't realize it even mixed, and I was doing like the track engineering side, so then that kind of just naturally happened there. Mm-hmm. So I was getting more light gigs, and then now I'm when I'm on the road, I'm on my laptop. If anybody, you know, ever gigs with me, I'm always working.
Yeah.
Like I'm the guy in the back on a laptop transcribing for students, transcribing for like artists, because I also write charts out for everyone in on bands that I'm MDing for, guitar charts, bass charts, the whole nine.
Wow.
Like there's different tiers of which I will invest in it.
Yeah.
So then that way when they have musicians, they have the full show of what we have. So
yeah, that's awesome.
But yeah, it kind of just kind of naturally happened. I wasn't planning to become a light designer and I don't care to be, but it just naturally, I just fell into it.
Yeah, I love what you said about failing too. I spent, if you noticed, Nate, the Roland back there, I know Ableton is what I need to do next to kind of get me to this next level. And so, yeah, I've just been kind of locking myself in here and learning. You know, you have to start somewhere. So like for me, I was like, okay, I have Ableton. I'm technically like aware enough of, and I'm a quick learner, and I couldn't figure out how to just literally just trigger, assign the play button to any one of the Roland pads. I was looking up every video and like I knew
that's
like
a tricky monster. Anyway.
Well, I knew how to do it. Well, I thought I knew how to do it and it just wasn't working. I was like, maybe it's just the Roland, you know, I reset the firmware twice. I did all this sort of troubleshooting and it was the simplest thing. It was in Ableton. I don't know if you can
probably under imagine settings.
It was essentially assigning, it was on the keypad of the computer to assign it, not MIDI. That's all I had to do.
Command K,
and it worked.
Command M.
Yeah, shortcuts. Yeah, I love shortcuts. But yeah, now it's like, okay, I just feel more confident and like, but I needed to go through that, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Like I have one drummer that I work with all the time because he doesn't have the Ableton knowledge. And I said to him, I'm like, man, just take the opportunity. Take the opportunity to just get on Ableton and I give him the session that I made for his artist. I made him a copy and I said, Brian's bleep up copy and fuck up copy. And I was like, just go mess it up, dude. Like go.
Love that.
Move things around. Like I need you to figure out how to rearrange it so that I'm not stressing out being on the road that you accidentally deleted something or you scooted it over by one measure and now everything shifted and the bass line, and I'm going, wasn't me.
That's going in the notes.
So
that's
it's like,
going in the notes, baby.
Well, and that's great. That's a good point too, because like, to bring it back to my example, I could have, let's say I texted you like, hey, and you maybe you would have said command K, like, or you would have given me the straight answer cheat code, which would have saved me a lot of time and would have been nice. But like, the value that I got from, you know, maybe it was 2 hours here and me being able to see other parts of Ableton through failing. Like I saw, you know, I was able to look at different settings and maybe I learned other things, you know, just through that process.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, it's like we said earlier, like the information, you could take a course on Ableton. I even for a while was teaching Ableton online and
that's wild.
I still have a few students that I do. And to be honest with you, it's not practical. It's just knowledge. It's not where you're going to actually use. I could sit there and tell you all the commands. I could give you a sheet of the commands. And unless you're using them every day, it's like, why did I teach you? Like, what does it matter to you if you're not using that command all the time? Yeah. So practical use. So just is what it is.
Yeah. Someone on this podcast said like, I forget who it was, but basically he was saying practicing can mean practicing Ableton or learning Ableton or learning the Roland or any, like, you know, just the software that you have. It doesn't, as drummers, especially on this podcast, right? Like when we say practice, it doesn't just mean practice rudiments.
Right.
It means everything about the show and the gig that you have.
Yeah. You know? That big picture, man, like it's all about the big picture that you're focusing on, the show as a whole. Like I'm going to go home, and do my PM work that I have for this big, you know, we're going to be gone almost a month and a half, 2 months. And like figuring out everything, the gear I have to program, like all of our electronics are adjusted off of Ableton and I control everything. So like my drum triggers all change in live time depending on where we are in the set. And I program it all. And then like, It stems from that. What's that?
That hurts my brain. I mean, that's stressful, right? I mean,
yeah. I mean, I have a redundancy rig that I built. Sure. So if one computer is down, it happens, and I can always manually change the drum pads. But
yeah,
I have so many electronics, and I just would hate to be playing a song, and all of a sudden it's a, and it changes to some buzz sound. I'm like, and it's happened. I played, and someone yanked a cable, and it. Was no longer the sound for that song. And it was just obnoxiously, it was like a buzzsaw sound on the snare drum. So every time I hit the snare, you just like, and it was high pitch. And you're like, and it was loud.
Yeah.
Like loud. Cause I had like in the chorus of the last song, I had it, the volume up and it's a special effect for one hit.
Right.
And then now you're hitting it on 2 and 4 and you're like, Jesus, this is not the sound. You know, like this, like it was sounded cool there, not here. So
context is important.
Could you remedy that in that situation, or?
Well, I mean, that's why I said redundancy rig was the most important. But I just started manually operating the Roland unit.
Well, I guess another segue there too. I mean, you're doing so much. You know, as we've talked about, not just drumming, and you're having to deal with so many other. People, musicians, tour managers, you know, engineers. I guess just like personally, how do you stay, you know, centered and balanced and not overwhelmed?
Like on stage or like in
life?
Yeah, just in life. Yeah. I mean, on stage too, but just.
I think I thrive in the chaos. My personality, my OCD that I discuss, I thrive in that space. So I put myself in those positions because when I'm not there is when I freak out. When I'm sitting still, I, you know, it's my RLS, the things that we drummers have on a, like a tenfold scale. Like I'm constantly I can't even sit through a movie without going, what if I connect this cable? and it just like, it is what it is. And, I feel the most at peace when I'm at working. And that is actually a trait that I'm breaking. I'm on the other side of that scale of now I need to be okay. Like I just spent a week away in Spain with my family and I was like going bonkers, dude. I'm like emailing, doing anything I can to connect to the working world.
Yeah.
And I'm like, stop. This is this is holiday. This is vacation. Like chill out. Enjoy it. Like you and your sister are getting older. Like it's like enjoy the moment, the times. And It's interesting, but to answer that is exactly what it was. I thrive there, so when I'm on in the workings, it doesn't feel chaotic. It feels like I'm in control.
Yeah.
When I don't have my hands on it, it's where I'm like, is this going to work? So people are like, can I help you put that away? I'm like, no, no, no. Because if I didn't see it go in there, exactly. I'm going to be thinking, is it in there?
Oh, my gosh.
Like yeah. a clutch, yep. like a hi-hat clutch. The yep. smallest little thing, always. And you're like, if you have techs that put stuff away, you're like, I know that somebody's just going to buy a replacement, but I want that one.
Yeah.
And you're just like, you have one instance where the one person just puts it in the wrong spot and you're just like, yeah,
yeah. Yeah.
It's gone.
It's gone.
Yeah. You ever heard that Brian Regan joke about that? He was talking about like, well, you just get another one. Like talking about a little kid losing a balloon and screaming. He's like, yeah, you laugh at that. He's like, but imagine if it was your wallet. It just starts floating away.
Yeah.
Oh, relax. We'll get you another one. Yeah. I want that one.
Yeah, yeah. Like, yeah. And all the credit cards that are in it.
Right.
You know what I have to do to replace that?
Yeah. It's yeah. the same.
You got to go
same.
To three banks.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Yeah. But on stage, that's always fun. The more preparation you have, the better you feel. So I'm a very active person on that stage. You've seen me play. I'm very engaged in the audience. I'm very engaged in the performance, whether it's jumping off my drums or like throwing some my sticks tricks, god yeah. high, yeah. like or beating my cymbals upside down. I don't care. Like
yeah.
it's about the show.
Yeah.
If I were to do this, Ableton.
Yeah.
And there's moments where it used to be more that, especially when we had our own light show that wasn't through this redundant system where I'd be like, if the lights go off, we're in pitch black.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
now I'm sitting here thinking about the tracks, yeah. the lights, and drumming. And that was a lot. And it was a lot where at times I felt it distracted me from the performance, and performance was sacrificed.
Yeah.
But it came from preparation of redundancy, consistency, saying no to the light shows. When management's like, hey, we should do a light show, then I'm like, no. Let's stop doing it that method because it's just not the way it should be. And as the drummer that's controlling it and the drums and this – I can't do what I'm here to do.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So that's also where it feels nice to let your people take their roles and letting loose in that control where, you know, I'm getting to the point where I love the team, our audio team, and I'm like, take it.
Yeah. yeah.
Like, let me just do Go what forth. I want to do.
Yeah.
I just want to play the fucking drums.
Yes.
Dude, yeah. So, I love that, though. I mean, and that's come up. Tim Buell, his whole episode is about preparation. And like preparing for when things go awry, you know,
yeah.
things go wrong, you're prepared for those things, you know, if the lights go off, you've actually practiced that.
Yeah, I built in a fail safe of just lights to turn on.
Amazing.
I literally had a pad on back of my, when I had the SPDSX that would just turn lights on. Yeah. So they weren't moving because everything was programmed in Ableton, but I had it where it was just a sequence where it's like, so if the main thing got unplugged, I could at least fire white lights or whatever just to have something on.
Man.
And I was like, cool. That works because there had it was a long time ago that we had a show and the lights just went off and there was nothing and we're still playing, tracks were fine and lights were just gone and we're yeah. just pitch black. People are like, what's happening? I'm like, drums.
Yeah, yeah.
You're doing this.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
Distracted practice.
Distracted practice.
There it is, baby.
Dude, I love that. That's gonna be in the title or the keywords or something.
Dude, yeah, that's so brilliant. Cool.
Yeah.
I literally don't notice when I'm doing it, but I'm constantly directing the band with my foot switch and the talk back while playing and just calling out call outs
yeah.
while playing. And I'm just like, kind of don't, it's not where it derived from, but it's definitely like why I can do it.
Yeah.
yeah
you know, and it's
so
not
cool.
counting in time or in the metronome timing. It's literally just talking about, hey, let's bring it down here,
yep.
and then we'll play the A chord and hold it, and then go into the next section, and making like random calls while playing the drums. And it definitely stems from church, watching my amazing, you know, band leader playing the keys, singing, and then switch to switch and say something, go back to singing the line, and continue the sentence over here. And you're just mm-hmm. like,
that's crazy.
Yeah. yeah.
I love that.
Yeah. And all at the same time, probably even cueing the band, the choir. He would literally at times just be like,
yeah.
And then lean over and be talk back. And you're just like,
oh, yeah.
what's happening? I'm over here doing this.
That's the thing. The thing that's most taxing, I was about to say that word, is task switching mm-hmm. at speed. And that's the thing. Like, you know, the research is saying that nobody really multitasks, which I kind of buck against.
Yeah.
I think there is such a thing, but most of the time it is just fast task switching. Mm-hmm. That's hard to say fast.
Yeah.
that is playing a line, direct the choir, sing a line, and then reach over, talk back mic. All right, we're going to drop down right here. Like, what?
It's this.
Yes.
He doesn't exist in one realm.
The guy doing all that's the avatar. He's up here.
Yeah, he's not thinking about, he's flowing in that state. The hand is still in time. Like, it's just, he's above it, seeing the picture. If he were stuck on one of those tasks, it's where things start to fall awry.
Yeah.
Like, you're just too hyper-focused.
Yeah.
It could be that blend of where you're switching, right. But there's no, like, it's not like the door's locked and you have to open the door to get in. It's right. Just an open passage that he gets to that other side. You know, it's that limb interdependence. You're not, like, you have to build that fluidity in it. And it comes from that level of, again, seeing yourself playing it. You know, it's like, if you're too much on that one limb, it no longer becomes interdependence. It's just limb, like, skill.
Right. Well, and thinking too much about it, focusing on it, will mess you up.
100%.
And we've talked about this multiple times. The whole Andre Agassi thing, I brought this up, like, probably way too many times. Yeah.
There's a reason for it. Yeah.
But yeah, he was in his head focusing on his backhand.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, yeah, it's messed up. There's something wrong with it. And Tony Robbins came in and it's like, yeah, so when you were the champion, were you thinking about this? No, he's like, okay, stop thinking about it.
Yeah.
And then immediately went back to just dominating tennis. You're like, oh, well,
there you go.
No, well, go figure. Somehow you got in your head about this thing. I really need to focus on this. Wrong. You need to remain aware.
Yeah.
You're already, by all means, practice whatever you want, but just don't be in your head about that. In fact, maybe it's possible you could be practicing. Maybe you can practice the wrong thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so.
I think so too, yeah. Quality practice is better than quantity, as we all know. But it's something in my brain of that, like, allowing that freedom. And it comes in those moments. We said it when you're in the room just, like, ripping with friends. The mistakes can happen here. But when you get up there, it's that point of just, this is all I know. Mm. This is what I can control and what I can do. I'm not saying don't try things, because that's not, you know, I would never say that. But it's the point of just, like, get out of the way of yourself.
Yeah.
Get out of the way.
Let's go.
Like,
that reminds me of one of my favorite quotes from JoJo Mayer. He's like, I don't want to think about my wings while I'm flying.
Yeah.
Wow.
Same thing, right?
That's amazing, yeah.
You know.
JoJo. Dude, he, like, drummer world, that man was on every page for so long.
JoJo, man.
His breakbeat video, like, in the, I think it was Times Square, right? And he's on the street.
Yes.
I probably watched that, like, over 100 times.
He's just
and tried to learn it. I had
fully disgusting.
Yeah.
Transcription, everything.
We're totally getting off in the weeds about this. I don't mind at all, though. One of my favorite videos ever is just Benny Greb playing at NAMM. And then suddenly he just goes, it's JoJo Mayer. JoJo's Mayer is just standing there looking at him, and like, Benny Greb being nervous that JoJo Mayer's.
Oh, that's wholesome. Benny's so cute.
Benny is probably one of my favorites, like, of the modern era. He's just musical AF, dude. Like,
and he is so freaking underrated. His feel, the way he thinks about time, and how much his feel has improved. Because since he's been a name in the drummer community, he's had good feel, but it just keeps getting better.
Better, yeah.
It just keeps getting, and it's like,
well, his sense of just time and feel and like, yeah, when he's just taking these musical moments, when he takes a solo, it's a journey.
Yeah, you're yes.
There's showmanship too, but there's just it's a musical journey.
Yeah.
So.
He's fully disgusting.
Other favorite drummers, modern or the old greats?
Always the greats. I mean, everyone can list that. Styx, dude. Styx Taylor's just an animal, an animal. Marcus Thomas. Freaking disgusting. Love that guy. Dude, I try to take something from anyone. You know, at some point, it's just like I will watch everything and anything. And if it's a live concert, I will be listening to it. You can ask anybody whether I'm driving, I'm listening to something live because I just love live music. I would rather listen to a live recording than the recorded versions. Mm. And I listen to any record that comes out. Somebody like the new Deftones, you know, came out a few years ago. Listen to it. You know, I haven't loved Deftones in a long time, but like I'll listen to anything just to be like, okay, what production could be grown here? Like what's changed in the world? And Korn just put out a record at the top of this year, or it was last year. I'm not sure. And I was like, loved Korn as a kid because they were the new metal band of the time. Yeah. You know, like, so I was like, let's give it a shot. So, but yeah.
Yeah. I mean, Jed Smith said this. I follow the same practice. Like when he learns tunes, he doesn't just learn the records. He'll actually watch the YouTube videos, the live shows.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's where the creativity is. Like if you're playing on Broadway, like you're playing, like, yeah, a lot of times you want to play the record more or less, but you're still playing a live show.
Yeah.
So you have to blend, there has to be a balance there.
Yeah.
Dude, that's the fun part about pop tunes. Like people take pop tunes for what it is. And I'm like, okay. So when you watch a new drummer that is like new to pop, they play it like pretty square. It's like very square or like over the top. But at the same time, you could tell like they've never really dug in on how to like make it dynamic. Yeah. And in the moment, you're like, there's a lot to be had here.
Yeah. Well, and you talked about JT. JT is a perfect example of that. His live show, like, dude, all those songs, they are totally the songs, just like on the record. You'd hear him and go, yeah, I love this song. Great. Sexy back, totally. At the same time, it's a completely different arrangement.
Yeah.
It's
with like, the vocal stops, like everything. You're just like,
It's just like a sick gospel arrangement. I love that.
I'm like,
yes. It's sad for me when I don't see that. Most of the time you see that live with pop groups.
Mm-hmm.
And once in a while you come across something that's like, that's identical to the record. Yeah. Why? Why is it identical? Why didn't I just listen to the record? I should have just stayed on Spotify and like taken a nap.
I don't value those concerts as much. I saw Post Malone do a full show with just tracks and a crazy light show.
Yeah.
And I love Posty. He's great.
Yeah, I love him. Yeah.
And I was still blown away. I would have loved to see a full band behind it.
Yeah.
Just to see what could have come. But like the production behind it, I was like, okay, I understand why. There was absolutely no way a band would ever be able to be afforded with the production.
Yeah.
There was like lightning bolts like happening in the fog from this massive lighting system they had. I was like, it's pretty cool.
Wow.
It's pretty cool. Whatever that is, that's great. And then you see, like, obviously, Tony Royster's a
mofo. Yeah.
That dude is legitimately just, like, an implanted alien inside of a human body. Like, whatever comes out of that man's hands, you're like. He did that whole Katy Perry in Vegas. Like, if you haven't watched that concert.
I haven't
It's like
yet.
A full production. It's like a musical.
Yeah.
Like, they have a full production, but full band. And the way they played I Kissed a Girl. Massive, dude. I will never play that song any other way than the way they did for that live show. He sticks to the freaking toms and makes those monsters sing as soon as the chorus hits.
Oh, that's awesome.
But you see all these drummers now that'll like take the chorus and they'll play it on an open hi-hat like a rock drummer would. And you're like, but wait, man.
You could do something else.
Yeah, I was like, just play the toms, like just beef them up. Keep that verse low, same little groove, and then you get that, just make them sing like you're in a, like just a jungle beat, just freaking huge choms, like you add like extra layers as if there was another drummer playing the other high rhythmic parts, and you're like, how can I layer this?
Yeah.
It's fun. It's the fun approach of listening to the live shows. You're like,
yeah. Just more possibilities.
Yeah.
I mean, you have to entertain. There's people there that paid money to see that, you know?
Yeah. I mean, you listen to a straight ahead record and you're like, cool, that is what it is.
Right.
I can play that beat.
I can do that. Yeah. And that's the interesting thing is when you do, I've known this to happen. A few people have talked to me about this. Like, yeah, I went to an audition and I played it like the record and they didn't like that. Like,
oh.
Interesting. Like, yeah. Like yeah, well, live, it's like this. I'm like, oh, well, that's, you would think that that would come
if they wanted,
like,
they would have sent reference tracks, right?
You know, right.
Like, come on.
And maybe that's part of the thing. They're like, we want you to sometimes
see what
you
can,
like, come
up with it.
Yeah, like,
it, yeah. Do your research.
Do the research. Exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
Take that initiative. I'm like, well, and if you came in and you said something like, would you like me to play it like the record, or do you want me to play it like...
like your live arrangement that I saw at such and such.
Oh, okay.
Thanks.
Yeah.
That's baller coming into audition, like multiple choice. How would you like me to play this? Because I prepared both options.
Yes.
Oh, I like, did that at an awesome audition.
Yeah.
And it was like just for... I didn't want the gig full time. I just... like, it was a newer artist. I went above and beyond. I went in and spliced all of the drum samples and made on my Roland and put triggers for, because it was a pop gig.
Yeah.
So like it ended up being where the drummer that got the gig knew the guy from college. So I was like, I'm not upset about it.
Yeah.
Like,
right.
Yeah. It was Jake and I both auditioned for the gig, and they were like, you guys just play so well together. So I was like, cool. But yeah, friends, no friends. I met awesome players. The guy that got me an MDing was from that audition. Like, I never even dreamt of picturing myself as a music director until I met Drew, and he does like 5 Seconds of Summer. And like, when I met him, my whole perspective of live pop shows has dramatically been changed.
Mm. That's interesting.
So I'm like,
yeah. Tell me the time. I think that I slept too late again. Well, should we do some closing questions here?
Yeah, yeah.
I'm curious, just drummy related, just like what your current setup is, any favorite gear you're using?
My favorite gear. Well, I just recently made the switch from Istanbul to Meinl.
Hey, dude.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Nice.
I love both companies, and I'm currently working out what package I'm going to get. We're still kind of formulating all that. I mean, I've been shopping around and know what I like.
Yeah.
You know, every drummer's got that taste, but I'm also just like, I want a few more extra things for my own library.
Yeah.
And Meinl cymbals, I've been dabbling in different drums, but as we talked before, I've definitely been more on the Pearl game because of the versatility with kit. I love to track on like a big fat Master Series 24 kick, you know, has that tubby like sound, but then playing live, I like just shallow toms and like, you know, just something easy set up at the accessibility. Yes. I don't want to play on a massive rock drum kit where the toms have to be tilted and angled in ways I don't want them to be.
Yeah.
I want my drums to be there in my face.
The Taz Zuckerman, like, yeah, dong drum, yeah, on the side.
Where your hands are doing this flat to vertical flip.
Yep.
You're like, that is not ergonomically appropriate in this day and age. Like, they make fast toms for that.
Yep.
But yeah, anything specific? I'm using my Roland TM6 for TM6 Pro for the drum triggering. For certain artists, I'll trigger every drum. And I have internal mounted drum triggers called Joe Becky drum triggers. Mm. For fly dates, I will use like the Roland like tom triggers and stuff like that. But yeah, the TM6, I switched over to that because I just like the – since it's ergonomical to the kit, it's like the ergonomics behind it. It's easier to hit if I want my tom pad to be by the toms, not on a, you know, over here.
Right.
Like to the left where I have to now like go from playing down the toms to now reaching for a tom on a pad on the, you know, SPDSX. Or then ungodly putting the SPDSX where the ride goes and then moving my ride where drummer shifted to that. And I'm like, that's just a weird place because now when I want to play it as a snare drum, I'm playing open-handed, and that's fine. I can do that just fine.
Yeah.
But it just kind of changes the way. The TM6 for me opened up the kit. It allowed me to put the pads where they exist and where I want them to because it's just a trigger unit. It's just a brain.
Okay, right. So it's individual drum pads.
Yeah, so it has up to 12 because each one could be its own pad, so 6 inputs. But what's cool about the TM6, if no one's used it before, it has 6 outputs. So you could – you could put your kicks out 1, 2, and give the engineer out front stems. So all my drums can be stemmed out. So the front of house has the acoustic drums and then the electronic drums.
That's sick.
Out front of house in their own specific spots. So then that way, if the one tom's not too loud, that you're not sitting there, the nuances on the roll, and you can EQ them exactly flat And then out front, they can adjust it appropriately to the venue, which is how it should be. It should be tuned to the venue, not tuned to the moment. People always want, oh, it's like this doesn't sound good here. It's like, well, it's not appropriate for everywhere. You know, like I could turn the kick drum down here and then you go to the next place and it's loud as crap. And then you got to turn down more or vice versa. So,
yeah.
But yeah, I love me all those companies, Vicfort Sticks all day long.
Yeah.
I've tried others. I don't know where you guys are on that one, but
I'm mostly Vicfort. Pearl was distributing this company, Vincent Drumsticks, a Swedish brand, which
you told me that at
I still use. Yeah, they're still being sold, I believe, in the U.S. But yeah,
I'm a Meinl stick and brush guy.
Okay, yeah. You know what? I don't think I've sat down with like a Meinl stick.
We'll make that happen for you.
Yeah,
yeah. I think the only reason I stuck with like I love Vic as far as like tip versatility. I'm a very like playing some fast acid jazz, man. Like I want a teardrop tiny 7A stick that's just burning in my hand. I don't want a beefy fat mushroom tip, and you know, like I want something that feels like it's doing the job.
Yeah.
Yes.
And I don't want to get in the way. And people don't realize that there's sticks that are more appropriate for certain genre styles playing. Yeah. They're like, it's built for that. Like you go to pick up a Peter Erskine stick, playing 300 plus is much easier than having a 5A standard like teardrop mushroom tip.
Oh, yeah.
Like
yeah.
You're just like ticketing, 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 ticketing.
Like that's what, like you see a lot of those guys doing the fast ride technique. I'm like, man, that's so crazy. I'm like, and they're using a maple stick. It's maple.
Maple.
That's why. Like, yeah, no kidding. Of course they can do it with that. Try doing that with a 2B. Get back to me.
Yeah.
Give me like three of your favorite food spots in Nashville.
Food spots.
Yeah. We're Nashville podcast. We got to talk Nashville a little bit.
Yep. Nashville podcast. Well, I'm a bougie boy. I don't know if you've ever been to House of Cards, but...
I haven't. My wife's been there a couple times.
I love me some House of Cards.
Yeah.
It's like a higher end like restaurant, so like I would always get a steak they have really good bass there as well. But the fun part about the restaurant is that they do magic shows.
Oh.
So it's a speakeasy, and they have table magic, so when you're getting your cocktails, it's probably the most fun experience. You get sat, it's at a specific hour, so you get sat in a specific timeline, so everything's spaced out perfectly. Hmm. So there's a person that comes over and does table magic after you take your drink order. They do the tricks, okay? And then by the time he's done with his show, your drinks are at the table. And then another magician comes over after your food order's been taken, and he's doing the magic, and by the time he's done, your food's on the table. And then when you're done with the whole thing, your purchase is also a 30-minute live show in a theater where you get to see magic.
Oh my God, I've never heard of this place.
It's so fun. It's so fun. It's an experience.
Yeah.
And the food is good. It's great. I mean, it's not my favorite like higher end restaurant, but it's good food.
Yeah.
Cocktails are phenomenal.
Wow.
That's always like my go-to. Whenever I have friends, family, I'm like, we're going there.
Okay.
It's
okay.
Fun time.
Love it. All right. That's
As far as like everyday eats, there's this food truck on Nolensville. I'm a sucker for just like truck tacos.
Yeah.
Yeah, that. I'm more of a coffee guy, so I would say I'm a big fan. If you've ever been to, I'm pretty sure they're making a move, but Falcon Coffee was always my like little vibe.
Oh, in the notes, never been. Love coffee.
They recently shut down the location they had, but you could keep an eye out. They were nice vegan focused restaurant, or their food was vegan, and it was right in Wedgewood, Houston area. Mm. They opened up that new like Airbnb kind of like hotel thing, and they closed. And I know that the owner was trying to keep it very low key. They had very minimal seating, and they were trying to be a big place. And I talked to them a million times. They wanted to be in a neighborhood that's like local. So I think what they did is they're moving, because they recently just closed the doors. But
all right, last question that I have: just any other hobbies away from the drums that you have?
I would say big hobby would be gaming.
Okay,
What are you playing right now?
Like, where do you want to start?
I'm just gonna take a guess. I'm playing the new Zelda.
The new Zelda?
Uh-huh.
No, I put Breath of the Wild was the newest. Because they have a new
The sequel to Breath of the Wild is out.
Yeah, so I have not I've not kept on that series because I, for some reason, did not make it through most of Breath of the Wild. Yeah. And it wasn't because of the game. It was solely based off of not being able to bring my Switch on the road.
Oh, yeah. That was
so, it. Yeah, yeah. But I have a gaming laptop. My buddies really got me into Fortnite because of how competitive it is. Mm. And I think I, strange enough, like, I looked at it first time and I was like, this is terrible, stupid game. And then I looked at the mechanics that it takes to build the things and I was like, oh, I'm gonna love this. Because you have to actually be technically good at something. And I'm like, it's like drumming.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm like, you actually have to like get mechanics. And I'm just like, ooh. So I started practicing that stuff when I was having fun. And somebody's like, you just sit there and like play Fortnite by yourself and practice those things. Like, it's like drumming.
Yeah.
Now, like,
I'm, watch me in a year. I'm going to kick your ass.
The game.
For sure.
But yeah. No, I'm old, so I still play Halo 2 like religiously.
Love it.
Yeah.
We would usually end by saying, where do you want people to follow you? But it sounds like you don't want people following you.
I mean, you could follow me. I'm becoming more progressively on there. And yeah. I am always on there for the meme's sake. So send me good memes.
Love it. Love it. Love it.
But you can just contact me on any socials. My email, robbodleydrums@gmail. Any of that works.
Sweet.
Love it.
Sweet, man. Well, thanks for the time.
Yeah, yeah. No, this is a blast.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Nashville Drummers Podcast. If you've enjoyed these podcasts, please consider supporting us on Patreon. For $5 a month, you can help support this dream and keep the ball rolling for us. Believe it or not, it's not free or even necessarily cheap for us to make this thing go. To sign up, go to patreon.com/Nashville Drummers Podcast or click the link in our Instagram bio. All of your help is greatly appreciated.
Check out our new website, NashvilleDrummersPodcast.com. And if you're not already following us on Instagram, you can follow us at Nashville Drummers Podcast.
This episode was recorded at Diamond Sound Studios located in Nashville, Tennessee.
Thank you for listening, and we'll see you in the next episode.